Big Talk. Pippa's Planet.
Time for us to step into the garden with Kirsten Bosch horticulturist Charisse Viljoen, who is standing by to answer your questions on any gardening topic. The number to dial is 021-446-0567, or you can send an SMS to 31567. Charisse, great to have you with us as always.
Thank you so much.
I'm so delighted to be talking about guilt-free gardening, because I think a lot of people are feeling that they shouldn't be doing anything in the garden because of what the water situation is requiring of us. You're going to make the case for the opposite, I think.
Absolutely, I am. You know, the thing is that everyone, as the weather warms up, is starting to duck their heads and hunch their shoulders and feel terribly guilty about their gardens. But there's a whole other side to it. It is incredibly important that we garden, because although we use water and it's a precious resource, we at least give back to nature. Many industries don't. And let's not forget that gardens are havens of biodiversity. It's this buzzword, but if you think about it, biodiversity is the variety of plants and animals, and we create shelter for them. We provide food for the pollinators, which are bees and butterflies and many other insects. If we don't do that, there'll be no fruit and veg production. The fruits and seeds from our plants feed the birds and small mammals. They attract a wide selection of insects, which feed reptiles and insect-eating birds. Let's not forget, plants supply the air we breathe. Just imagine our cities without gardens, nasty, barren, desolate scapes. And the pollution levels would be skyrocketing. Plants help us, you know, process the whole pollution. They're an absolute haven, our gardens, when the wild and felt areas are reduced to tiny fragments because of urban development. Gardens are key in providing living space for our insects and our animals and our birds. And interestingly enough, it's now been proven that cities without gardens have a much higher temperature rating. And really? So, in fact, evaporation would be increased. The loss of water would be increased. And if you think about your lawn, you know I'm not fond of lawn paper, but I would rather have someone with a piece of lawn than an impermeable paste surface where the water just runs off and is completely lost to the soil. We can grow our own food. Many extinct species and species that are very threatened in the wild still exist today because we're gardening with them in our garden. And we're just the best people. We care about nature. You know, we're in touch with nature and what's going on. So, yes, don't use drinking water on your gardens. Be innovative. But garden and garden proudly. You are playing a key role in keeping Cape Town and its surrounds cool, producing food, happy with its animals. You're awesome. Don't feel bad about it.
Gosh, Charisse. obviously the key words there being be mindful of what water you are using. Don't use potable water at all in the garden. But thank you for making very strongly the case for why we still need to be doing it. Obviously, it means we have to adjust the way we approach gardening in these times. We have to relook the plants that we've chosen, relook the way we look after the soil content, etc. And that's what we're here for. So thank you to those of you sending through questions already. And Audrey has got the first question of the day in on the email already. A reminder, though, that if you're going to call us, the number is 021-446-0567. Audrey would like to know the following. She has a beautiful fig tree, fully grown, but says, I'm never sure if I should water it or not. I have a well point, and should I feed it? If so, what and when?
Well, most fig trees can be thirsty, and yet they only tend to thrive where they have managed to find their own underground water. So as long as the fruit is forming and is, you know, succulent and the leaves are not drooping, don't give it extra water unless it asks for it by dropping its fruit or looking like it's dehydrated. So leave it if it doesn't need it. And a really good all-round fruit tree feed is 315 with a large front number and the large end number. And in about summer, as they're forming their fruits and through to when they're finished fruiting is the best time to apply it. Don't over-fertilize is also my new gardening message. The more you fertilize, the more you have to water to support that growth. So very, you know, restricted fertilizing. But do feed your plants are hungry.
Okay. Audrey, thanks so much for the email. An SMS from Anonymous asking, please, for advice on a natural product to prevent bugs eating my green pepper plants. The leaves are eaten throughout.
You make an onion and garlic spray. You literally just chop up onion and garlic and put it in a spray bottle. don't leave it in there for more than a couple of days. The fermentation is nasty. And you spray that all over your green pepper plant. The bugs hate it, but it's very edible for you, very effective. Some people even chop up a bit of chili in it, and it's a great natural deterrent.
Okay, so again, it's onion and garlic plus perhaps a bit of chili, mm-hmm. and you chop it up and?
Put it in water.
In water, okay.
Let it soak in there for half a day, longer, and I'm scared what kind of beer and wine it's creating, and spray it on.
Thanks very much. Okay, I hope that sets you right. We seem to have a bug infestation today because the next question is also about bugs. Saying there is a pest of some kind in my garden. The insects are very tiny and white. I'm finding them on the underside of the leaves and it feels kind of sticky where they're sitting. Do you know what they are and more importantly, how I get rid of them?
Well, it does sound like it's whitefly, possibly even a small mealybug. And the sticky juice is very attractive to growing sooty mold. So you'll find black mold often forming, and the ants are quite often moving those little bugs around, aphids, which would not be white, but it's the same problem with aphids. So watch out for the ants, control them, because they're busy herding and milking the bugs. And then you need to chop off the worst of the infected plant material, and you can use my garlic spray to help deter them, and you can squirt them really with a really hard jet of water.
Non-potable.
Yes, thank you, Pippa. Perfectly timed. And that'll hopefully get rid of them. Otherwise, go to your local nursery. If you're really desperate, nothing's worked, and they'll have a recommended insecticide for you to use.
I'm going with the onion, garlic, and chili spray. I love the sound of that. I'm going to give it a try.
You can also put a bit of sunlight soap in there, Pippa, just to make sure that it sticks to the insects and the plants.
Okay.
A few drops.
Good luck. I hope it comes right. Let's go to the lines. What would the gardening show be without a lemon tree question? It comes from Clive in Wynberg. Clive, good afternoon.
You've made my good day, afternoon. Clive. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Pippa and Cherie. My lemon tree had about 500 blossoms on it. And they've all dropped off and I have about 5 lemons.
So what's happening, Clive, is that quite a few people are complaining that their fruit set isn't as good as it should be. And it definitely is climatic. You know, it's much hotter and then it's much colder. The insects' breeding cycles that pollinate your flowers are all interfered with. There's not enough water going around. And it's all right because the plants tolerate this imbalance in nature, and you will have a poor crop this year and possibly next year, but in the third year it'll come back. And if you do have non-potable water, just give it a bit more water, give it a good feed of Epsom salts, don't overfeed, as I said, just give it a chance, not to worry, it'll happen again as soon as the weather kind of balances itself out again.
Sorry, I think I...
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
No Clive, problem, thanks Clive. For your call. Sorry, I accidentally cut him off for a second there, but appreciate the call, Clive. I hope we'll get a few more on 021-446-0567. In the meantime, to the email we go. Linda saying, I am confused. Please, can you explain the difference between compost and mulch?
Sure. Mulch is usually something that is not yet quite broken down into humus. It's quite a solid chunk. It could be peach pips. It could be leaf litter. It could be wood or bark chips. It could even be grass cuttings. But they have not yet decayed to that point of being, they don't have a smell. Humus is a black network, soft, spongy material that is fragrance free, but it feels and smells like the earth without being scented, if you know what I mean. Whereas a mulch is something that is applied on top of the soil and is usually not yet broken down, can be a number of things. Compost is something that is now broken down. It started to release the nutrients that were in the organic material. And it actually is a food source, as well as the humic matter providing that sponge that improves the soil. Compost is usually worked into the soil, although lately turning soil is something that I'm starting to turn against. Mm-hmm. Rather put everything on top. The minute you're turning the soil, you're bringing what's below and should be below onto the top and exposing it to the heat and the wind and no water. So rather just put things in layers on top of the soil. A mulch could even be straw, for instance. It's anything, really.
Okay, thanks for the question. I hope that sets you straight, Linda. Back to the lines. Kathy is on the line from Bridgetown. Good afternoon.
Hello, Pippa. I have pincushion proteas in my garden, which I grew last year for the first time. And it did very well last year. But this year, the the bush is grown, the shrub is grown very big with big, big leaves, but the flower, the cushion, has gone brown. And I'm not sure why, because, I mean, I drive through the national parks all the time, and there they don't even get fed anything, and their cushions look so beautiful, and mine is all brown.
Did they not flower at all, Kathy?
They are. The flower is there, the pins are there, but the cushion has gone brown.
The actual plant, or the part
cushion.
Of the flower?
You know, it's a pin cushion, so you have the pins. The flower,
yes,
the protea
yes.
itself,
you
have
okay.
the pins, and then you have the cushion inside.
So what?
Now the cushion has gone brown.
Okay, are you watering your plant from above?
Well, only we left it the entire winter because obviously we can't use water. And before that, during summer, we used portable water, not drinking water.
Okay, if at any point when watering, just try not wet the flowers because the cushion can actually hold water and it can cause some molding and rotting in there.
Otherwise,
pull them apart and see if there are any insects in there causing any trouble. That's
okay.
also a possibility. And for the moment, as soon as you see any affected cushion flowers, cut them off. The bush actually appreciates being pruned lightly. And so get rid of them entirely and hopefully it'll be better next year. But definitely do not water the flowers and go and look if there's not an insect causing trouble.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy, for calling in, and enjoy them. So lucky to have beautiful pin cushions in the garden. They're one of my favorite flowers.
Such a treat.
I think today is the day of the fig tree because we have two more questions about fig trees. Before I get to those, Janet, please hold a moment. Somebody just asking, Stan, thanks for your message, saying please just repeat that onion and garlic mixture recipe again.
Okay, so it's a clove of crushed garlic, and you need to add an onion, let's say 2 chilies, and 5 mils of sunlight soap, and you're making about a liter of mixture. It's very, very strong. Do not wipe your eyes or get it on your face, and then you can spray that onto the plant. If you find the plant is browning a little bit, it might just be that it's burning, just diluted a little bit more, but definitely the insects do not like it.
Okay, Stan, hope you got that. Thanks for the message. Janet in Philadelphia, back to the fig trees we go. Good afternoon.
Well, it sounds like that that's probably the formula I need. I'm so sorry to join the conversation so late, but I've got these horrible little minute stink bugs on a very new fig tree. And, you know, I've been washing them off and squashing them by hand, but can I spray this formula on that to save it? Because I had a terrible wilted a leaf, and I can see it starting to dwindle.
Absolutely, and you can definitely use the spray. And the smell itself deters them, and quite often the contact with the garlic and the onion, some people even or add a little bit of oil, canola oil, so that it really smothers their breathing holes when it lands on them as well. So it's a very kind of clean, effective way, even though it might smell a bit, of getting rid of the bugs and coating them with something that they don't like.
Okay, but the leaves will still be fine then?
They should be fine, yes. Just hopefully that I haven't made the spray too strong in my in my attempt to help you all murder your insects.
Oh dear. Janet, thanks so much for the call, and I hope that works for you and gets rid of the bugs. Another fig question from Carol on the WhatsApp line, which has sprung back into action, so please, you can start using it again. Carol says, my figs reach a point where they don't ripen further. The tree is beautiful. What am I doing wrong?
Quite often that is a lack of trace elements, micronutrients. So it's a wonderful product that you can get called Trail Mix, and it provides all those micronutrients. And the other thing that can quite often happen with fruit trees is irregular water can cause them to abort their fruit. So it's either just irregular watering, meaning they're getting it, you know, in 10 days and then in 3 days and then instead of, you know, more regular and a consistent supply and amount. And then of course this Trail Mix, it'll help you hold on to your fruit. I did get a very interesting method of getting rid of insect pests. When you can't get to the underside of the leaves, or they're very tiny and you can lightly vacuum them.
Oh, my goodness.
It depends on the strength of your vacuum cleaner. Yeah. But it is a really fantastic way to kind of have the suction where your fingers and water and sprays can't get in, and you simply vacuum them off your plants. So for any of you who are really desperate, might be worth a try.
Okay. You won't believe it. There's another fig tree question.
Oh, my word.
We have a fig infestation today. Tanya on the WhatsApp line has a fig tree that needs to be moved. It's still quite small. She wants to know, will it survive?
Absolutely. They survive really well. Just try to take as much of the root as possible. So the soil and the whole root area, as much as you can dig out, and not kind of let the soil fall off its root system. So a pot, you know, or a big bag's worth of soil along with root, dig it all around, and then you are going to have to water it consistently until it recovers the roots that it's lost by you having transplanted it. But they do survive it very well.
Okay, thank you. Right, this is a long SMS that's come in parts, but I'm going to try and piece it together. From Marina, thank you for your message. She says, enjoying the show, your guest is speaking about not over-fertilizing. I use 315 Epsom salts and seaweed foliage spray for my lemon, lime and fig trees and my veggie garden, and I'm not sure if I'm overdoing it. How often should I use these?
Instead of every 2 weeks, I would drop it down to once a month and then watch your plants individually. If they start to show yellowing on the leaves, a chlorosis between the veins, they are then telling you that they're a bit hungry, they need a bit of food. If they're not flowering or growing as well as you would like them to, but the problem with giving them lots and lots of fertilizer is they put on lots of growth, which then needs a lot of water.
Yeah.
And if you're using potable water, don't over-fertilize. If you have an alternative source of water, then that's fine. You can do the regular every 2 to 3 weeks. But at this point, I would drop fertilizing down to once a month or once every 6 weeks. And don't forget, every time you fertilized, you have to water it in. So it's just one of those garden actions that one needs to consider before doing.
Okay, thank you. Annelise is on the line from Parklands. Good afternoon.
Hello, Papa, and hello to your guest. I've got a question about transplanting a avocado pip that has got a stem and leaf and a root, which is in water at the moment, and I don't know how to transport it. Should I put it straight into the ground or into a pot first and then later on into the ground?
It's a really great question. Many people wonder. So it's quite a shock for the root to change its environment from completely water to something that's quite solidly soil. So what you could do is you could go get a very light bark compost mix and mix in a little bit of sand. What you're trying to do is introduce air while keeping it quite wet, because soil and sand and is usually just a medium for holding the root, and then the air spaces are a combination of air and water. So you're just trying to get those roots used to having some air around them without dying off. So go and mix some compost and finely milled bark and sand to quite a friable light mix. You want it to be kind of bouncy in your hand. Transplant your avo into a pot. Keep it in the same position in the windowsill till it's recovered from what we call transplant shock. Mm-hmm. And once it's grown a couple of new leaves or shown root out the bottom of the pot, move it outside to the shade. Again, let it recover from the change in the environment. Just a couple of weeks every time, and then boop, into the garden, and it'll be fine.
Okay, fantastic. That sounds simple enough.
Okay, good luck, Annelise. Thanks so much. Lucky you to have an avo tree on the way. Just before we run out of time, I think we need to set Meryl straight, because I think she misheard you. You were saying don't turn soil, correct? Not don't turn compost.
No, you must turn compost. Please do. But it's really a new strategy, particularly in our drought-ridden times, to not turn your garden soil. Disturb it as little as possible. Add to the top, rather. And dig it in just a little, but don't dig in massive spadefuls and turn them upside down and continue to do that. No rotivating. Done.
Done. Charisse, great to have you with us as always. Thank you so much. We'll chat again soon.